This is Saturday with Claire Byrne. We welcome your views on any of the topics we're about to cover over the next hour. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie. Our Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. Let me introduce you first of all to our panel here in the studio today. We have Brian Hayes, Fine Gael MEP, Paul Murphy, Anti-Austerity Alliance TD. We've Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD for Roscommon South Leitrim, Gina Quinn, Chief Executive of Dublin Chamber of Commerce, and Katie Hannan, Political Correspondent with Primetime. And we start with an event that's happening right now as we speak. It's a protest being held around the country against the water charges, and we go to our phone lines and Derek Byrne from the Dublin Says No campaign. Derek, I understand you're on your way. Where are you headed?
I'm just outside Comedy Station.
So you're leaving there in the next little while and heading towards the city centre, is that right?
Around 2:30, yeah. We'll be marching up the quays and coming back around by Dame Street.
And how many have you got there roughly, or what's the turnout like?
Well, I'm only just getting off the bus now, so I haven't been down and it's still early.
Okay. I see on the Facebook pages in relation to this, the aim is to shut down Dublin city centre. Is that the plan?
Well, it's where the protest goes, there'll be no traffic going, there'll just people be marching, and when both sides join up, that's where they'll stop.
Can we have a chat now about what happened over the course of the last week? Because you were at the centre of many headlines around the water protests, and we might just have a listen to the clip that caused all the controversy now.
You little media parasite! Where are you? Betrayer!
And those comments were directed at President Michael D. Higgins on Friday of last week. Derek, are we going to see any of that today, or do you think that maybe that was a step too far and that you're going to pull back from that sort of type of stuff?
What you're going to see today is people all across Dublin and those that are travelling from the country walking and marching united. None of the protests have been violent. Nobody has been harmed. So it's, as every other protest has been, peaceful.
But do you think that those comments and that clip and the headlines generated around it were damaging to the campaign in any way? I mean, how do you feel about it personally now?
The people are angry. And the people have every right to be angry in this country, because the people of this country have been sold out by so-called political leaders. And everyone that is out protesting has a right to be angry and be very angry. Now, I can turn around and tell you how I've been affected by austerity. I see you have Brian Hayes there in your audience. Brian Hayes, I asked Brian Hayes once on the streets of Dublin to tell me how he was affected by austerity. Brian Hayes looked down his bloody nose at me and wouldn't even answer the question. And when you get the chance, I'd like you to put the same question to Brian Hayes on air and let him tell the people of Ireland to explain how he's been affected by austerity.
Well, Brian Hayes is here, and Brian, I don't know if you want to address that question, but one question I will ask you is what you think of what how Derek's campaign has played out over the last week or so.
I think people are beginning to see exactly the motivation by some of these people. The great majority of people who are protesting are peaceful and are angry and are making their views known. But there is a tiny group of people, including the individual who's on the radio at the moment, who are using this opportunity, intimidating people, bully boy tactics, and the public see this and they don't like it. And I think the reason, I think Mr. I'm not sure this gentleman's name.
Derek Byrne.
On two occasions he tried to stop me in the street. I wouldn't answer his questions. I'll tell you why. Because he was preventing me from walking away. He was preventing me from going about my business. He was trying to intimidate me, as he's done other colleagues. And what happened to the president in the last week, which was an appalling incident, but it's very similar to the other incidences that are directed at Fine Gael and Labour backbenchers day in, day out. We've had calls into one deputy this week that she'd be burnt out. Another call into another deputy, an actual arson attack on the constituency office of another deputy.
We're not saying that Derek Byrne is involved in those particular
I've said nothing. What I'm saying is, for a tiny group of people in this country, who are using this opportunity for, in almost near fascist tactics. They are doing themselves great harm, but the people see them for what they are. The people see them for what they are, and there is no support for them. And I think
what are they?
I think I don't know what they want to obtain. Anger is not a solution. I think it is crucially important that people talk about solutions, not personally abuse the president, personally abuse sitting members of the Dáil, ensure that the deputy prime minister of the country is hemmed into one area, refusing her the right to go about freely. This is not that's not democracy. That's a form of fascism.
OK, Derek Byrne, do you want to respond to that, that you're guilty of bully boy tactics?
I'll just respond firstly to Brian Hayes. One of the incidents he referred to happened 7 years ago, Brian. So it didn't just happen, and that was 7 years ago. Now, secondly, I've asked you, again, a straight, simple question. Will you tell the people of Ireland how you and your colleagues in the government have been affected by austerity?
I've answered this question repeatedly, and the people of this country know. Sorry, I don't know this individual, but I will make this point. Everyone has been affected in this country by austerity. Those at the top, and especially those at the bottom. And the only way this country is going to get to a better place, as we're doing at the moment, is to get growth, investment and jobs back. Everyone's been affected by what's happened in this country. Every government minister, every TD in the Dáil, every public representative, no matter what party they are.
OK, Derek, everyone's paying higher taxes and has had salary cuts and so on. But I want to come back to you and to what happened.
No, because Brian is still not answering the question.
Well,
I'll tell you this, Brian.
All right, we're going to get...
In 2008, Brian, I was earning $47,000 a year. By 2011, I was down to just under $29,000 a year. So that's how I'm affected by austerity, right? Now, don't tell me that you've been affected like the rest of us.
Everyone's been affected by austerity.
We have seen the excessive salaries earned by politicians in this country and the excessive expenses that you've drawn down. So don't tell me you're affected the same way as the rest of us in this country, because you are not.
Derry, can I just talk to you again about these protests and about what happened? Do you regret what you said to the president? Do you think
As I said, it was regrettable that he was called a midget, but I stand by everything else, because at the end of the day, President Higgins was a man I voted for and was someone that was very outspoken on human rights issues. And we have a very serious human rights issue going on in this country at this moment in time. And President Higgins has not spoken out for the people of this country. And the people of this country want the president to speak out for them, because their politicians aren't listening to us.
Right.
Now, if Mr. Higgins' position goes against, he can't speak out, well, maybe Mr. Higgins should stand down and come and stand up with the people.
The Gardaí issued a statement today saying that their aim today is to facilitate a peaceful protest. They also say that they want to ensure the public safety of those attending and of those going about their lawful business. I just want to play people a clip of your interaction with one Garda at the protest on Friday of last week.
No, I'm asking you to go home.
And I go home when I'm ready to go home, right? Okay. Not because you tell me.
It's finished here now, right?
I don't care, right? Okay. You found it big enough to walk in and start pushing women for nothing, right? Because you're a big man. Now, don't tell me to go home because it's over. You want to
I'm
be a big man.
To leave
and
here.
I'll tell you I go home
I'm
when I'm ready to go
here,
home.
Yeah. You're part of the trouble here today.
I'm part of the trouble.
You're a large part of the
trouble. How am I? What did I do?
I seen you running down the street.
What did I do? I recorded you in the acting. So
I've asked you to go home.
No.
That's all.
And I've told
it's
you, no. I'm not
the
doing anything.
The protest is over now.
I'm
it's
not
over
doing
now.
Anything.
Okay.
The only one that's causing trouble here was you. Do you want to arrest me for standing here? Right. Well, then I'm not breaking the law, right? Now, I will go home when I'm good and ready, not because you tell me to go home.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, I'm happy with that.
Right.
Is that fair enough, Derek, do you think?
Well, when you go back to the clip, why don't you explain to the audience about how that very same guard found a fitting to go into a crowd and just violently push women around for no apparent reason. Now, that's not what the Gardaí are there to do, to go in and push women for no reason. The Gardaí are there to protect and serve, not to assault.
Okay, well, we heard the guard talking to you and he sounded perfectly reasonable, but
well,
to be quite honest,
see,
it sounded as though
you
were goading him a little bit.
No, what you had there was a guard trying to removed me and I asked him a question and he wouldn't answer. Now, as I repeatedly questioned him on why he found fit to push women. Now, at the end of the day, he'd no reason to push women. They weren't in any... They weren't near the president's car. And one or two of them, he pushed out onto the road.
Okay, so you're not ruling out that type of stuff happening again, possibly even today?
There will be no trouble here today. This is a peaceful protest. The people will be on the road. They will be marching to their destination. That's what it is. Anyone intent on trouble is not welcome.
Do you think the publicity, just before we let you go, because I know you have to get to the protest, the publicity around all of those issues has damaged the anti-water charge campaign?
No, because at the end of the day, the protest isn't about one person or one group. It's about the issues. And the same issues will still affect the people that they are directed at.
All right. And Paul Murphy is here as well. And Paul, you've been, I suppose, straddling both sides of this and distancing yourself somewhat from Derek, but you are part of this movement. Have you anything to say to Derek today or anything to say about the clips that we listened to?
Well, I wish all the protesters today well. I think, contrary to any suggestions, today's protests will be peaceful. They should be disciplined. And they happen right across the country, organised by different local grassroots campaigns of people opposed to water charges. I mean, the death of this campaign has been announced repeatedly by sections of the media after Joan Burton in advance of December 10th. And this campaign is not dying because the water charges continue and people can't afford to pay them.
Is it mortally wounded, though, because we have Derek saying things like he is saying to the President, to Joan Burton and to the Gardaí?
Not at all. People are capable of making their own mind up about whether they'll protest or not, regardless of what one individual or two individuals said on previous protests.
Would you prefer if Derek stayed away?
No. Derek is a part of the anti-water charges movement, just like myself, just like others. This is a broad movement. Different people have different... You know, strategies, different tactics. For us, the main thing is to argue now that this movement is going to explode with the bills dropping in April. Bills will drop over an 8-week period. And if people stand together and refuse to pay, there'll be a massive crisis for Irish water, okay, a massive crisis for the government, and this can be defeated.
All right, Derek Byrne, I'm just going to let you go because I know that...
I just want to get back to Brian,
sure,
just before I go. And I just want Brian to answer the question before I leave.
But sure, everybody has had their salaries cut and is paying more taxes. I mean, I tell you what, that's
we
a given.
We have thousands of families out there at risk of eviction.
I'd like to say one thing, may I?
Derek, Brian wants to respond to you.
Yeah, I want to say one thing. I'd like Derek to take his arguments onto the ballot papers and to stand in an election and contest an election in an ordinary democratic way. You make your case without shouting, roaring, screaming at people, personally abusing people, especially the president of this country, and let the people decide in the ballot box.
Well, Brian, if you're still afraid to answer the question, because the people of this country...
Last May, the people of Dublin decided to give me 55,000 number one votes, 40,000 number two votes. I got my answer in the ballot box, and you should too.
It's not a popularity contest, Brian.
Right. No, it's the voters. The voters decide. The voters decide.
Well, Derek, will you?
Will you be affected?
Derek, will you run for election? Will you run for election?
I have no interest in politics in this country because politics in this country has been shown for what it has. It's systemically corrupt and it has been for generations. And it has been destroyed. This country has been destroyed by the civil war parties of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil,
okay,
who have engaged in nepotism and cronyism and have looked after their friends and their family for.
All right. Well, look, we're going to let you go, Derek. And for a man who has no interest in politics, you're certainly quite involved. Thank you very much.
I guess 20 minutes in RTE. Not bad either.
Joining us. Well, he is part of the political headlines over the course of the last week. And just to reiterate, the Gardaí have said that they are there today to facilitate a peaceful protest and to ensure public safety of those attending that protest and of those going about their lawful business. Michael Fitzmaurice, to come to you on this, I know you wanted to get in there. What's your view on Derek and what you heard?
First of all, look at calling the president names, you know, it's not a great thing to be doing. I'm no favourite of the president, and I've made that clear down through the years, because when he was a minister, he signed in the Habitats Directive. But like, that doesn't mean, in fairness to him, you know, you have to weigh things up. When he goes out of the country, he represents Ireland well. But what he done on the Habitats Directive, you know, I personally, and I'll be very blunt about it, I didn't vote for him, even though the majority of people in Ireland did, and that's democracy, because I saw the consequences of what he had done. And I don't buy this situation of making a patriotic speech of, you know, people in poor conditions by the president or austerity, and we need to look at things, and then, you know, not doing anything about it. And I know his hands are tied, but in the water thing, in fairness, look at it went in a legal matter, advice from the Attorney General, and I've actually read up on it. And, you know, the guy was either resign from being president or else sign the matter in. But I made it clear that I'm no fan of the president for what he'd done to people right around rural Ireland, because people, for what he signed that day in the Habitats Directive, people are being evicted out of their properties. Taxpayers are paying more money and it's costing jobs.
Okay.
But I balance it up. And to be fair, there's any time I've seen him, be it in England or outside the country, you know, he's represented Ireland well.
All right. Katie, I just want to talk to you about this balance that people like Paul have to strike, because you need to keep the hardline guys on side, but you also need to stay away from the unsavoury elements. Is that a big dilemma facing those people?
I would say it's a very difficult position that Paul Murphy in particular finds himself in, because it always seems to be Paul Murphy in studios, whether it be TV studios or radio studios, who are defending things when things spill over, get a bit out of hand in these protests. And there is no doubt, whatever Paul says and whatever Derek says, what happened with at that protest with the president, what happened with Joan Burton before Christmas, certainly knocked a dent out of the movement. Certainly there was a number of people, I've spoken to them myself, who would say, I'm just not comfortable to sign up to that sort of thing. So I think it's a tough line that the Paul Murphys and others do, because Paul will say it himself, they're not in charge of organising the major protests. There's all these individual groups around the country, some more militant than others, and they'll have a big day like today where they say, OK, we'll come to the city centre of Dublin and, as Derek Byrne would say, shut it down. But it's not clear who exactly is responsible for bringing them there and who is responsible for keeping everything on an even keel while that protest is ongoing. So it's a very difficult balance to strike.
Paul, you're not in charge because you're here, but you are joining them later on.
Yeah, I'll be participating in the protest.
What do you think
of
that? Let's shut Dublin City down aim.
Look, I don't think the purpose of today should be to shut Dublin City down, and I don't think that's why most people will be going or participating in their protests, be they in Cork, in Limerick, in Galway or anywhere else around the country. They'll be going to express their opposition very clearly to water charges. And I think, you see, there was quite a malicious headline, in my opinion, in the Irish Examiner, which attempted to portray that I was defending what it says, defends Higgins abusers. And it seems that sections of journalists and politicians are incapable of drawing a distinction between the defence of the right of people to protest and the defence of particular actions which may take place
but
at a protest.
But because you haven't come out and condemned what he said,
No, that's not true. I was on the radio all day on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, condemming what he said.
But because your position is quite nuanced, that's why. I mean, you're still on side with him in one way, but you condemn the personal abuse that he meted out on the other hand.
But I don't think it's all that nuanced. I defend the right of people to protest.
This is where the issue is.
I am opposed to and have condemned people abusing. I mean, and all those who say they disagree with my position, are they in favour of banning protesting against the president?
Can I just make one point?
Otherwise, they also defend the right to protest.
I defend everyone's right to protest peacefully. And in fairness, the people who are protesting before Christmas, actually, the government has changed the position in terms of the water charges, and people who protested then can justify the work that they did on that issue. But can I make one point about the Jobstown case? And I just want to make this very, very, very carefully. You went and you turned to a group of people and you asked the question, will we let her go? The tarnish of this country. And I don't care whether she's a tarnish of the country or any other human being or a citizen of this country. The fact of the matter is this, you have no right to prevent people from going about their daily business. Equally, this other fella on the radio has no right to do it. He constantly does that. It's intimidation. It's bullying. It's not the nature of Irish democracy. And I think when you did that in Jobstown, When you did that in Jobstown, most decent people who are protesting in the streets up to that point said they don't want any part of you or your campaign.
I have to correct the point, which I corrected on the media repeatedly, right? There is deliberate miscomprehension by yourself and by others in the media in order to distort things. Let me answer the point again about me asking the crowd, shall we let her leave? I was asked.
You're in no position to ask that question.
I was asked by the Gardaí to ask that question.
You're in no
position
to do it.
Your problem is with the Gardaí, not with me. What there is an attempt, it's so blatant. So Brian Hayes pretends to be all in favour of people peacefully protesting, etc. He's not in favour of the protest that happened on the 10th of December or any of the other major overwhelmingly, like, completely peaceful protests that have taken place because they challenge the establishment in
There's
this
another
country.
Thing that's happened
And the other
there.
Thing that There's this is that's really happened. About, right?
No.
It's summed Just up, let him respond, it's summed Brian, up, then we'll come back
it's
to
It's summed up in the use of the word mob. The problem of people like Brian Hayes is that ordinary people are getting involved in politics. And yes,
no,
it's angry.
Country.
And,
yes.
and yes, people are mobilizing.
Ordinary people
and,
are moving
that,
away.
That,
ordinary
no,
people are moving away from your campaign.
Because what's
Claire,
it's
can
like
I make one
looking
point?
At what happened
Just
in Greece. The so-called mob, ordinary people coming to power, tearing up the rules, saying we don't accept your austerity.
Do you know what
saying
is?
We
do you know
don't
this
accept
is all
your
about?
Dictates,
this
saying
is a,
we should have a real
This is a real,
okay.
this is a simple Brian. Contest of who can be more angry. This is Paul, and when the lights, camera, action go on, he gets on the stage, he shuffles every time he sees a camera coming on. This is a big opportunity for him. This is all a performance. And it's a contest of anger. Who can be more angry than the next? So then we have your crowd, the socialists and the Sinn Féin crowd, and then you have another group of people. Who can be more angry? That's this country is not going to get to a better place by pretending anger is a solution.
Gina, I want to let you in and Michael, then I'll come to you. Gina,
I mean,
first.
There's another perspective to all this. There's all the innocent bystanders who are affected by this. The intention today is to shut the city down. What about all of the people whose livelihoods depend on the city? What about all of the individuals who are trying to get across the city to visit friends, relatives, see people in hospital? The type of protests that we've seen last week, what went on with the president, what went on with Minister Burton, that has all made people afraid. And ordinary citizens are afraid to go into the city centre. We all respect the right to protest, but it should be done in a way that respects the right of others to go about their business.
And do you
the
really think people are afraid to go to Dublin city centre today?
Around the focused on the people who are making the decisions, so the politicians, they should be focused on the key influencers. They shouldn't have the objective to close the city down. We have had six major protests in less than 6 months, and they've had a very significant impact. Takings are down 50% on the days of protests. That's not acceptable.
Michael,
one thing that news is breaking last night about in this total or this whole Irish water debacle is that the subvention to the group water schemes around Ireland has been, say people that have their own well in a group water scheme, has been cut. And these are voluntary workers, and they have cut the subvention to try and make up the figures. Because these figures, I said it the first day that it was announced, the day of the budget, I said the figures cannot stack up.
What was the subvention?
Subvention
before?
Is where group water schemes are, they're voluntary people in a whole community. Mm-hmm. They do the work voluntary, and they get €140 per house in the subvention to run the scheme. And it has being cut, from what I understand last night, the word I've got through is back to 95. So what we have done, and I've said this day one, and it wasn't popular to come out and say that in the group water schemes, they never said they wanted this €100. You know, they never came out.
The conservation grant.
But yeah, but what they have done is the people that are out there voluntary in the community doing this work, supplying the water, they have cut this. And what is happening now? The reality
Michael,
of
Michael, do you not get the €100 conservation grant and the 95?
Yeah, but the person gets it, Claire. But what you have to remember...
But that's
still
more than what you're getting
before. No, but hold on. It still costs the same to run the scheme. And what we wanted was our subvention held to maintain the group water schemes. And also, what it's going to do now, and in our scheme alone, it's going to raise the prices. You have to get €5,000 in on that scheme. And other schemes around the country are bigger. So what you have to do is raise the price of water. And like this dillying and dallying around with figures to try and make it all add up, does some work. You know, we've got to someday call a spade and say, this is what this will cost, this is what this will cost. And don't be trying to put people around in circles.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we'll leave that one there because we want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Greece before we take a break. There was a meeting yesterday between the chair of the European Group of Finance Ministers, Mr. Dijsselbloem, and the new finance minister in Greece. And it was interesting to see, Paul, I know you were very involved in this and you've been there and so on in recent times. It was interesting to see the two of them together at the press conference and the new Greek finance minister saying that we don't want to renew the bailout programme. Now, I think there was probably a few people who thought the Greek position maybe softened a little bit after the election. Not so, it seems. What is going to happen next? I mean, who is going to provide finance to the Greek banks if the bailout agreement isn't renewed?
Well, there's going to be a confrontation. And there's a confrontation here between the peoples of Europe and democracy within Europe and the banks and the bondholders as represented by the Troika.
Where will they get the money, though?
Well, we don't know how much money currently exists in liquidity in the Greek banks. It's quite likely that they could get beyond the February deadline without needing more money. In any case,
a billion Greece, a day, according to the Financial Times, leaving
the banks. Yeah, but in terms of the state, in any case, the Greek state has a primary surplus, which means they're taking in more on a yearly basis in tax revenue than they're spending on public services. The only reason they have a deficit is because of repayments of the bondholders.
What about Russia in this story? Will Russia bail them out?
I don't think that's the most likely scenario. I think there is a negotiation and a confrontation happening, and Syriza and the Syriza government is using every card it can to attempt to put pressure on the European establishment. But we see democracy in action. And so the expectations that Syriza would soften its positions is the fact that, well, Hollande was elected in France, our government was elected here, governments have been elected everywhere on the promise to end austerity, and then the next day they've turned around and say, well, we've looked at the books, we can't do it. Whereas on the first day of being elected or the second day, the Syriza government has said they're going to raise the minimum wage, as they promised, they're rehiring public services, they're saying they're going to end the privatisation programmes, they're saying they're going to restore collective bargaining rights, that they have stated that the democratic wishes of the people must be respected. And there was, I think it was yesterday, Jean-Claude Juncker, the head of the European Commission, he said there can be no democratic choices against the European treaties. And that sums up the attitudes of the European establishment, that mm-hmm. the European treaties and the banks and the bondholders protected by those treaties take precedence over democracy. So it is going to be a confrontation. And it's a question of who will blink first at this first early stage. I don't.
Well, Angela Merkel has already said, hasn't she, in the last couple of hours or overnight, that she's definitely not blinking.
Yeah, but we'll see. Pressure's going to come to bear. I don't think this is going to be. I think we'll see a concession given in the short term to extend the memorandum until June. And then a more significant confrontation will take place around June. I think that's the most likely scenario, because there are risks from the point of view of the European establishment. Greece does have cards to play. The idea of a disaster in Greece would spread to other Eurozone countries, the dangers of contagion. And the fact that they have a primary surplus gives them the ability to threaten, at least, to refuse to pay the debt. So there's a confrontation, but I think anyone who saw the press conference will think, or the vast majority of people will think, Jesus, that's what we want. Someone to stand up to them. And if you see afterwards, there was an engagement between Varoufakis, the new finance minister, and Dijsselbloem. And apparently what happened is Dijsselbloem was just shocked. And he said afterwards, you just killed the Troika. And Varoufakis responds saying, wow. But that's, people voted killing, to kill the Troika, like they did
about,
in Ireland.
The problem about killing the Troika is that you killed the people who fund you, the people who keep the show on the road, the people who keep the hospitals open and the schools open. And in all of this, I mean, Paul wants the confrontation again. It would be better to come to a settlement, a negotiated settlement, and I hope we can do that.
What's the feeling in Europe? Because you were there until this Thursday, of course, in your role as MEP.
I mean, I think people are obviously, they want to come to some agreement with the new Greek government.
Are they scared by the developments?
No, I think people, they want to come to some agreement. It takes time to get to know people. And I think it's important that we would do anything we can for the Greek people. But I don't think anyone should bully Greece. But equally, Greece can't bully other people, quite frankly. And that's the European way, is to come to some agreement on this. The big difference now, Claire, unlike 2008, 93% of what the Greek government owe is to European taxpayers.
Us, 350 million to us?
Yeah, it's close actually to half a billion of our money is there.
Like we can afford that.
But half of the money that they owe is to Italy and Spain, both of which heavily indebted, both of which have to close their deficit. So the notion that the European taxpayers who have been funding this are going to take a massive haircut is just not going to happen. Now, the private sector have moved away. I mean, there's already been two bailouts. On the first occasion, what we call PSI, Private Sector Involvement, or initiative, there was a big cut, a big haircut. And then we took the agreement in terms of the bonds that we wouldn't take any interest on Greek bonds for a 20-year period. So the notion that the private sector is waiting to run into Greece to fund Greece is just barmy. It's not true. Mm-hmm. So I hope we get to some settlement. I think a restructuring of the debt would be the best possible outcome. Now, one thing I do agree with the new Greek government, in fairness to them, they have a trimmed down cabinet, but I think essentially they have a new minister responsible for corruption and tax collection. Now, 200 billion of Greek money is actually in Swiss bank accounts. The 6 weeks before the election, people stopped paying tax. Mm-hmm. There is an issue around tax collection that needs to be addressed. And in fairness, the government are doing that. So they're going to have to get more money in, just like we had to do, increasing the tax and broadening the tax base. But at the end of the day, do I think that there is going to be a write-down of Greek debt? No, I don't, because it is European taxpayers who are funding Greece and keeping Greece alive.
Are you shaking your head, Katie, because you agree with Brian, or are you?
Oh, no, I'm just shaking my head because I think it is just so difficult. It could not overstate how important it is what is happening in Greece now in terms of what will happen in Europe over the next 12 months. I mean, you look at what's happening in Spain, Podemos, they're poised. They're at that position that Syriza were at a few months ago. And really, I think their political future and whatever way things are going to go in Spain is completely dependent on how this works out for Syriza in Greece. And whether this game of chicken that is going on, you couldn't describe it as anything else. It's who's going to blink first. They've introduced this new card now with the Russian, the idea of not going along with the Russian sanctions, and whether this will be their bargaining chip in terms of getting a debt write-down. It is almost impossible to see how Angela Merkel is going to, whether it's politically possible in any way for her to go down the road of debt forgiveness. And then you see what's happening here. I mean, how important this is to the political situation here. I was amused that Paul went to Athens. I saw Sinn Féin, where there was a kind of who's the bestest friend with Syriza game going on the angry contest. On Twitter. clearly... the Irish government here, this government and the last government, both took a particular view, which was we will play the game by the rules. We will do everything the Troika says. And at the end of the day, we will get rewarded. We will do our penance.
That.
And this is the only route towards out of this mess.
I don't accept that.
If it turns out that the Greek way, which is to basically say, no, sorry, this is not sustainable. This is not repayable. We can't do this. If it turns out that works out in some way towards some kind of a debt deal for Greece, it does really raise an enormous question over the entire political philosophy of our last two governments.
Michael.
Yeah, I think, Claire, that all of Europe has to face up to a problem, be it Angela Merkel or whoever. There are people eating out of dustbins in Greece, from what I understand. And I'm no expert on Greece. I'm not going to say I am. We have had years of austerity here, and we hear we're turning corners, and I don't know how many corners we have turned. But the realism is that this, there are people in Middle Ireland at the moment cannot send their kids to college. They can't afford it. And this cannot continue. We need to bang heads together. Mm. I have often said...
You're in favour of this debt conference idea, aren't you?
I think that we should have something like a 100-euro bond that could be pushed, that the debt of countries can be pushed out. Angela Merkel is great to be up on her high horses talking about we won't do this, that or the other. They're still paying from, I think it's back in the 1940s or 50s. And I've heard ministers down through the years saying, like, when our banks were bailed out, we've heard saying we had to do this, that and the other. But if we look back in hindsight, when people said, should we have had our own currency? Should we have burned or, say, closed down the banks and used them like any other business? And when you look at what's happening now, we are moving on to what we talked about a few years ago, quantitative easing, which is basically pulling money from the sky and saying, this is money. And we are also gone down a road, this type of a road in Europe that this money that we're talking about sending out to different countries. And it's a whole fiasco what's gone on. We've like kicked the bucket down the road a few years. People are no better off, and we have to face up to it. And Greece needs help.
Can I just make one point?
Really quickly, Brian.
Make one point. As a result of the government's patient strategy in negotiation, 50 billion euro has been saved on negotiation.
That's a myth.
Just because you're shouting me down doesn't make you correct it.
Detail it, Brian.
On 20 billion on the promissory note side.
Hang on for a moment.
The cost of Irish debt has come down by 50 billion over the total. And you might like that.
It's rubbish, that's, Brian.
What we shouldn't forget is that during all this time, investment into Ireland has continued. Job creation has continued. We are slowly but surely increasing the number of people in work. Our economy is growing. We are very, very different to the Greek economy. And we have the lowest rate
of investment as a percentage of GDP in the entire European Union. We do. Lower than Greece. We have a very minimal level of investment. You have a collapse, 60% lower than 2007.
Actually, for the first time in years, private sector money is coming into the country. In a place beside your constituency, I'll show you a map about it later, Newlands Cross. That came by German money and Dutch money building that major piece of infrastructure. And that's because we got out of the bailout and because the private sector says Ireland is a good bet in the future.
All right. We're going to invest money back into Ireland. We need to take a break, Michael. The quickest point, 5 seconds.
They talk about the country getting better. There are 57,000 people who are going to be evicted out of their houses this year. That's reality. When we talk about the country getting better, yes, parts of Dublin is getting better, but go down to the west of Ireland. Go to Donegal. Go south and you will see realism in action. There's a nightclub at the moment in Roscommon that for 32 years was open every Sunday night, and tomorrow night it won't be open. That's realism of youngsters gone out of a country. That's the reality of people not having money in their pocket. And Brian can have this magical mist
solutions,
around the
Michael.
Place.
Solutions.
Yeah, but solutions, Brian, what has been done isn't solutions.
I think
because it hasn't
not all
been
of them. Not all, can, most
it hasn't
have
been a strategy.
Let's work on solutions
for
together.
Different regions. And, if, and regions haven't been looked after right around this country.
Right. That's why the public finances have to be in good shape.
You're listening to Saturday with Clare Byrne. You're very welcome if you're just joining us. Let me remind you of our panel joining us in the studio today. Brian Hayes, Fine Gael MEP, Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD for Roscommon South Leitrim, Paul Murphy, Anti-Austerity Alliance TD for Dublin South West, Gina Quinn, Chief Executive of Dublin Chamber of Commerce, and Katie Hannan, Political Correspondent with Primetime here on RTE. And Katie, we're going to come to you first because the latest on the Aer Lingus sale is that it's not happening. Is that true, or where are we at? You've done the digging.
Well, my sense of it, obviously the deal hasn't even been put on the table yet, so it can't be dismissed or whatever at this point in time. But certainly my sense is that it would be easier to get a camel through the eye of a needle than to get this deal through cabinet at the moment, because and there has been the sense, oh, Labour don't like it and Labour pushing against, but I don't get any sense within Fine Gael either that there's any appetite for this at all, because the risk in terms of connectivity and more in terms of in the run-up to the election that there may be any job losses connected with any such arrangement. There's no appetite for it at all. Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody who had been at the Labour had that special PLP meeting last week about it, and it was put to me that a very senior member of the Labour Party who was a former minister and who was not Rory Quinn was quoted as saying that why would we put ourselves in the way of all the grief and all the possible, you know, risk attached to this for a cheque which would end up being just a cheque for 300 million euro, which we'd have to post to Frankfurt anyway.
Yeah.
And that was basically, and there was a general nodding along to that. And we know, because it's been reported already, that Joan Burton as well has basically been quoted as saying that the case has not been made for this as yet. Mm-hmm. I spoke to Kieran Donnelly yesterday, who put a motion in relation to this at the Fine Gael parliamentary party. And again, the whole narrative there is risk versus reward. And the general view, and he said it seemed to be shared quite widely at that meeting, was that the risk is simply too great. There's too much unknowns there. And in the run-up to an election, it is, I would say, unthinkable that a government will put themselves in the way of that.
Cliff Taylor makes this point in the Irish Times today that politics now, at this stage of in the lifetime of this government, is all about not making a misstep, playing it safe.
If we had just come out of an election, this would be a completely different story. There'd be completely different things at play here. Because ultimately, long-term, you'd have to say that the way the international aviation business is going, that there are upsides, big upsides for Aer Lingus, perhaps, to go into a bigger you know, to be.
I think
here.
That's something yes. that yeah, Gina Quinn would agree with. Yeah. I mean, does yeah. it annoy
but I'm just saying
you
the realpolitik of the moment yeah. and the timing of it.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that annoys
what Katie
you.
Is saying is a political analysis
does
of
that,
the situation.
Does that bother you, though,
but
that the politics affect
if you look at it from a business point of view, I mean, size really matters in the aviation business. And all of the research will say that for economies, size matters around the aviation business, because the more connectivity you have, the more your economy will grow and develop. A 10% increase in connectivity, 1% increase in GDP. That is the statistic that supports this. So Aer Lingus is going into a bigger organisation that will allow it to, as an airline, provide Ireland Inc. with much more connections to other parts of the world, more opportunity for investors, for tourists, for Irish exporters to get to their customers. All of these things is really, really good for Aer Lingus. I have no doubt that if this deal doesn't come to fruition, because as Katie has said, it's not even on the table yet, it's just a discussion about it. If this doesn't happen, this we will be having this discussion again within a year, 18 months. Somebody else will be looking at
it. Do you find it frustrating?
It cannot
though.
Survive. As
can I just ask you the question?
The long term. I do find it frustrating because I'm looking at this from a business person's perspective and I'm seeing all of the opportunity here. This is a real opportunity for Dublin and Cork and Shannon to grow on the back of a major, major partnership here with IAG. But, you know, it may not happen for political reasons, and that is frustrating.
Brian, what do you make of this line? It's in the Irish Independent today that Labour have got one over on Fine Gael in this respect.
Well, I'm not aware of any decision, despite Katie's intelligence gathering over the last 24 hours or so. As you know, Minister Donoghue has put together this team of people who are looking at the offer right now. One thing strikes me, I mean, whatever about the country turning a corner, Aer Lingus has certainly turned a corner thanks to really good management and really good workers. It's now a very viable company that's worth, what is it, 1.3 billion. That wasn't the case a few years ago when people were shouting, roaring and screaming about it. The truth of the matter is the model of better efficiencies has worked, actually. And one of the things I do agree with Gina on, I mean, is the opportunity for Dublin to be a new hub. I mean, people don't like to fly to Heathrow now. There's opportunities from the north of England, from Scotland, from Wales, from Northern Ireland.
And you've pre-clearance.
And yeah. We've pre-clearance. Now, the issue the I do understand, and I think Kieran O'Donnell was the person you're referring to, Katie. He makes this point from a you know, a Shannon and Limerick perspective and a Cork perspective.
What about Knock?
Knock's doing quite well, actually. Yeah, what we need to do is on the question of connectivity. It's really important for especially Shannon and Cork that the question of the Heathrow slots remains. And equally, where stands the workers in all of this? So I think in any proposal like this, you've got to look at the threats and you've got to look at the opportunities. I don't agree that the money would have to be handed over to Frankfurt. Actually, that's something we did negotiate, that at least half of the sale of all proceeds during the Troika time would remain here. I think in totality it would remain here. But the money is
I
not the issue.
Okay, the material point is, though, is it worth the grief for 350
well,
million?
Well, the question is, how are we... Air aviation is a hugely important business for an island country. We've got to grow this business. I mean, the DAA will tell you, I think business is up 17% year on year. They've done phenomenal things in the airport, and it's a huge point of business growth for the entire country. So these are the issues that the government will have to wrestle with in coming to a decision. I would make one last point. The share price this time last year was half what it is now. So, I mean, whether it's going to go up any further, is a question. So, it's about the future. We've got to make a decision for the future in terms of air aviation.
But you're
for
not
the
going
company.
To tell us whether you think we should sell it or not.
I'm going to wait and see what is produced from.
Can
from
I
the
say
group.
As evidence of the economic impact of this, since the San Francisco route was reinstated directly between Dublin and San Francisco, we have had an announcement of more than 1,500 jobs, and that's in less than a year.
And you think it's
coming
directly
from companies in the area of San Francisco. So it is directly related.
But I don't
connectivity
see any evidence to
matters hugely.
But
both sides would agree that connectivity matters. In fact, the argument that connectivity matters is the argument of those against the sale to IAG. Because IAG is a company that is obviously interested in one thing, which is the bottom line, which is profit. And if it makes
Aer Lingus
sense
is
for them
a
to,
publicly listed
if it
company
makes sense
also
for them to
interested
rationalize
in its share, return to its share
as part of their world you know, scheme of airlines that they have, One World Alliance, well, then they'll do so. And if it means a selling of the Heathrow sites,
Aer Lingus will be bankrupt if it was
if
left
it means
to you, Paul.
A reduction of the
you
amount
oppose
of flights
any
into Shannon, into Cork, they'll do it. And this isn't an abstract discussion. IAG took over Iberia, and as a result, 4,500 jobs were lost.
If Iberia was here, losing a million a day when IAG took
so
over the airline.
Okay. Just,
it is Iberia now again. In profit, at last in profit.
All right. Michael.
Yeah, Claire. Winnie Walsh or any business person, and anyone that's in business will have to admit this straight out. If you buy a business, you buy it to at least break even and make money if at all possible. There's no point in you know, selling a pub down the road. A government in certain strategic assets in a country needs its fingers in the pie to create an environment for employment. And that's why, like, we can talk about IAG and the offer that's in. But what we have to remember, and this comes very clear in Shannon, in 2007 or 8, there were certain slots taken away. It caused havoc in that region. We need to make sure that Cork, Shannon and Knock, that we do not sell ourselves short, because there's nobody, if I buy a business, there's no one, and let's be clear on this, there's no government or anybody else going to tell me how to run my business in 2 or 3 years' time. Either I'm buying it and I'm the owner, or I'm not.
So you think new owners will knock those
Let's be realistic about it. If you buy something, you're not going to have someone else telling you how to run it, or else who's the boss? And that's the, and we have to get this into our
those
head.
Routes are running at the moment because they're commercially viable for Aer Lingus.
But they will continue.
That's why the
If I see a route that's more profitable and take one of them out of Shannon, you can do that. There's no point in saying you can't.
That could happen with
Aer
Lingus tomorrow.
Yeah, but look, at least the government has a certain veto on it.
They don't have a veto.
Well, look,
it could happen tomorrow because we only own a quarter of the company at the moment. There's nothing to stop that happening at the moment.
At the moment, though, they only need 5% extra. If we didn't have it, we'd have nothing. We'd have no stake. So it shouldn't have been privatised in the first place.
Well, you see, had it been left to Paul and his descamisados, Aer Lingus would be absolutely bankrupt.
It would be in public.
It would be bankrupt.
It would be in the interest of the country. There'd be no question of losing the Heathrow stats
and the pigs would fly.
For the benefit of regional economic strategies, we need certain, you know, the government needs their fingers in the pies, in my opinion. Look, everyone knows, and the dog in the street knows, that Aircom, when it was sold, now we're all talking about it, it was a travesty what happened. And we need to make sure that we don't make them mistakes, because look at FDI investment. If you talk to them, be it in Galway, Roscommon or Mayo, they will tell you that Shannon is a very important, and Knock
critical,
is very important.
Critical.
So look at, let's not make that mistakes. Let's have our fingers in the pie to be able to push the button and say, make sure.
Can I just say what we've noticed is that there's agreement in a couple of places between yourself and Paul. What about another alliance here?
Sit down and talk yet.
Well, you might do after this programme. Quick break. Day with Claire Byrne. A spokesperson for President Higgins has said to us that, as outlined in a statement at the time, he fully complied in every respect and detail with the Constitution is in his consideration and signing of the Water Services Bill. That relates to a conversation we were having at the start of the programme with Derek Byrne from the Dublin Says No campaign. And as we said back then, the water protest is underway, or just getting underway, around the country and in Dublin city centre too. And it's to There We Go Now and RTE News reporter Joe McReilly, who's on the line from Connolly Station. Joe, what's happening there?
Yeah, yes, Claire. There's hundreds, possibly even gone into thousands of people gathered here at Connolly Station. The junction of Amien Street and Talbot Street is completely blocked now. And there are men, women, children, all well wrapped up against the coals, many carrying banners, some of them wearing hard hats with caps attached, that sort of thing. And they're all getting ready to head off on the march. The march hasn't moved off yet, but they're forming up now to begin moving up along the quays. And at the front of the march, there are the women from Edenmore in Raheny, which, as you know, has been a flash point in the protests over water meters and water charges over the last number of months. So they're in the front, in the vanguard, and the march is getting ready to head off up the quays and through the city centre.
All right, Joe, thank you very much for that update. Joe will be updating us on RTE News on radio and television throughout the afternoon. A further assertion from the spokesperson for the President that the claim by Deputy Fitzmaurice that the President caused or led to evictions, there's no basis in fact for that assertion.
Sorry, can I be very clear on that? I says, when the Habitats Directive was signed in Ireland, what has happened now is people are being put off their property to exercise their right, and it was the Habitats Directives when it was signed in that has caused
all
that.
Right,
and I'll be very clear on
that. We have to be clear as well on what the President's spokesperson has said, and we have done that. And thank you very much indeed, all of you, for joining us today. Brian Hayes, Michael Fitzmaurice, Paul Murphy, Gina Quinn and Katie Hannan. We're back next week at 1 o'clock. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.